Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Scott Bauer.
Welcome to Rewind, this week's edition, look at the Capitol and what was going on. First, Rewind was there. We have debates about jobs, abortion, and Paul Ryan talking about taxes. Rewind was there.
The good news is Congress is on track for getting comprehensive, fundamental tax reform done by the end of this year.
We are seeking to terminate the appalling arrangement between Planned Parenthood and the University of Wisconsin, under which UW has provided faculty members to serve as abortionists at Planned Parenthood's abortion-only facility in Madison.
The Republicans say Democrats like you who oppose Foxconn are opposing family-supporting Wisconsin jobs. Your response?
Yeah, my response is this. I think Scott Walker got taken to the cleaners.
25% of police calls for service involve persons that suffer from mental illness. If you suffer from mental illness, you are 16 times more likely to be shot by a police officer.
Arts and cultural experiences account for a significant number of small businesses that stimulate our economy in Wisconsin. It generates $335 million at least annually. The industry also employs over 42,000 full-time workers among 10,000 businesses in our state.
Here I sit day after day, and I see young, hot, intelligent young African-Americans who have products, man, but I can't get them funding. Mm-hmm. And Wisconsin is a very conservative place, right? Yeah. No one wants to be the first to invest in something. We always want to wait to see who's going to do it first.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
We're losing the family-sized kind of farm that you think about when you think of the traditional Wisconsin farm. I'm competing in a commodity market with the same market that the 12,000 cow dairy is competing in, and that's very difficult.
Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters and its more than 40,000 members urge legislators to stop this bill before it gets any closer to opening our state to the destructive effects of sulfide mining.
All right, Scott, let's talk of the biggest political story of the week, I think, in the Capitol. The worst kept secret, Madison, especially out in the open. Scott Walker's going to run for re-election. I'm not sure that shocked you when you saw the news. So he's going to announce November 5th at a business in Waukesha. I guess, one, any significance in the announcement date to you doing it November 5th of 2017?
Sure. I mean, it's 1 year and a day before the election. So November 6th of 2018 will be when Walker's up. So why not do it on the 6th? I don't know. Doing it on the 5th, I think you'll be able to stand up there and say a year, you know, tomorrow, 1 year from tomorrow, I will be on the ballot, and whatever he's going to say, he's going to say. So
I will guess he's going to say things like, are you with me?
Yes.
And there's more to be done. Speaking of that, there's a clip we have from a digital ad, because Walker's campaign has been kind of dribbling out like bits of news for weeks now about like this new Forward logo, mm-hmm. This digital ad this week to try and kind of tease us. So let's look at that clip. It's Scott Walker, digital ad ran this week with him on a motorcycle. Let's check it out.
I love traveling the state and hearing how the things we're doing are helping. But there's more to be done. Investing in training for our workers, helping people create jobs, making our schools even better. At the end of each day, after all the miles and conversations, I can't wait for the alarm to ring. See what opportunities tomorrow will bring.
Are you with me?
So, Scott, why the dribbling out of things? I mean, the logo, the digital ad, now like they gave us the release of always going to announce them. Why keep putting out these little bits and pieces?
Well, they want to be in the news, right? I mean, they want to keep their name out there by giving us bits and pieces that people are going to write about or talk about. It's trying to keep his name out there five different times announcing the same thing. You know, what was it, the day after the digital ad came out on whatever day it was this week, and then the next day, the exact date of the announcement comes out. And I'm certain between now and then there will be other things that they do to make sure that we're still talking about this while we await what we all knew was coming the day after he dropped out of the presidential race 2 years ago.
Yeah. I'm going to guess, too, that they needed to kind of keep running people because he wanted to announce in July. I mean, he wanted to sign that budget in July, be done with it, mm-hmm. and announce. So by doing this, because he got pushed back September, it's a way to kind of keep bringing that back because we're so budget-focused for so long in the Capitol. This kind of reminds me, oh, yeah, by the way, there's a race coming up.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, he's been running for re-election for a long time. I mean, from day one, right? So, I mean, this is kind of just like a nuance in terms of when he does a speech, now it's about a campaign speech as opposed to what it was before. The differences are very slight.
Now, one of the things going for Walker, it seems like, is the Democratic field, because nobody's really broken out yet that can kind of grab that field and say, okay, I am the front runner. I'm the one to give money to. President Scott Walker, I mean, what are you seeing out of that field? What challenges do they face in trying to run against him next year?
Sure. I mean, money is the big one, right? Who's going to have enough money to compete with Walker and all the folks outside of Walker's campaign orbit who are going to support him and spend a lot of third-party money on the race? And, you know, it's that whole double-edged sword of a big primary. It's the Democrats will be battle-tested in the sense of they will have this year to kind of go up against each other and hone their message, but it'll also be a year where there's not a clear contrast with one candidate versus Walker. And as you said, there's no clear front-runner, so all these Democrats are thinking, you know, the bigger the field, the smaller the vote number I have to get in the primary to advance. So, you know, depending on kind of your philosophy about a primary, that can be either good or bad in terms of emerging from it. But, you know, ask Tommy Thompson how he felt about the Senate primary.
Well, tell me, is the biggest thing going for Democrats right now the possible environment next year? I mean, the president's numbers, I haven't seen a Marquette poll in a while, but the numbers have not been good out of Wisconsin. Is that something that really gives them hope? Is that enough to drag down Walker in your mind?
I think every Democrat on some level is hoping that it's a referendum on the president and that they can benefit from low approval numbers in Wisconsin, assuming they stay kind of where they've been. Walker's numbers are a little bit better than they have been of late, but he's still below 50%. But, you know, that's been his MO from day one. He's kind of flirts around those 50, just below 50%, and then come election day, he gets just what he needs, you know, and a little bit more to win. So, between now and November of 2018, I mean, who knows what is going to happen with the world, with the economy, with the state. And certainly Democrats are hoping it's a midterm, you know, referendum on Republicans and they can benefit from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting, it's the first time Walker will run in a non-wave year, other than like the recall, obviously, which has own dynamic, but his first non-wave year for Republicans election. So I'm not sure how that's going to play for him. One thing I picked up in talking to people about the Democratic field is, the longer there's no front runner, the more there'll be a call of who else could run. And it's worth noting, we talked to Ron Kind this week, who's said no 1,000 times running for governor in past years. He said he's not rethinking his decision, so don't count on him to make a comeback in that field. Also worth noting, I think, Mandela Barnes, former lawmaker from Milwaukee, said he's looking at running for lieutenant governor. One of the interesting about what Barnes told me was that he could help the Democratic nominee, who we right now, we assume is going to be older than 58 and large, most likely white, and see could bring up voters that Dems missed in 16, young minorities, Milwaukee. Do you think a lieutenant governor candidate can really have that kind of impact on a race?
I mean, it's a good argument for a lieutenant governor candidate to make. I'm not sure that many voters are going to go in there and vote for the ticket based on who the lieutenant governor is. But, you know, it is a good argument to make, and there are some younger Democrats who are thinking about running, Malin Mitchell, African-American, Kelda Royce, in her 30s, you know, but neither one of them has officially gotten in yet. And as you said, Tony Evers, a lot of people look to him. He's the only candidate who's won statewide, but he's 60-something.
Yeah.
Mandela Barnes be a good contrast with Tony Evers age-wise, you know, all of that? Yes.
Yeah. So let's move from the political stuff for Walker, kind of the capital stuff. We knew we were going to have a surplus at the end of 2016-17. That was given because of the numbers we've seen before. DOA puts out its annual report. We're a little bit better shape than we were before. So we're looking at now $579 million. What we had the bank at the end of 16-17. That's about $112 million more LFB thought back in the summer. So one, I guess, is this a big deal? Do they spend this money to sock it away? And two, how much is that in light of like what the budget is?
Right. I mean, so it's not a huge amount viewed in the context of the entire $76 billion budget. But obviously, I mean, having $112 million more than you did, than you expected, is better than not having that, right? It's always hard to keep money in reserves. Who knows what the legislature is going to do? We do know that they're not going to be in very often between now and the election. And the governor most certainly will talk about that surplus when he announces on November 5th. So I think that's a number we're going to hear quite a bit about.
Yeah, it seems like more of a talking point for Walker than a big impact on the budget. He already, through his vetoes, freed up some more money than what lawmakers had approved. He's been calling for that sparsity aid bill, which I think is just shy of $10 million. I can't quite figure out if John Nygren, the co-chair from the Assembly, is really excited about that bill. His counterpart, Alberta Darling, is open to it, supports it. But Nygren wants, okay, well, that's nice, but we have these priorities for small schools. How are we going to fit these with what you want to do and strike a deal?
Yeah, I mean, there's some lingering, you know, unhappiness with the way the budget vetoes went, given that John Nygren was, you know, championing one approach to helping low-revenue districts that the governor vetoed out. And so now we have the sparsity aid proposal. It looks great on a campaign ad. And certainly the governor will want to have that available to him to talk about in 2018, so we'll see.
Okay. So let's switch gears back to the politics. I've been talking to folks about this U.S. Senate primary for a while. I know you have too. There's been this dynamic of Kevin Nicholson has this national attention, this national profile, and Leah Vukmir has the grassroots, like the connection, right? This week, I think the biggest thing that I saw was the Nicholson Super PAC started a TV ad. He was a former Democrat, president of College Democrats of America, wrote a letter to the Emily's List when he was with the organization, praising them for their work, obviously a pro-abortion rights group. These are all things that don't play well in a Republican primary anywhere, but especially here in Wisconsin. So this ad, which we're going to watch a clip of in a second, talks about him being conservative three times. Think that was on purpose, Scott?
Yes.
Let's watch this clip real quick of part of the Nicholson, pro-Nicholson Super PAC ad.
Kevin Nicholson, a Marine officer in Iraq, Nicholson completed 100 combat missions. In Afghanistan, he volunteered for IED duty and earned a Bronze Star. Nicholson came home to Wisconsin a true conservative, a patriot committed to strengthening our military to defeat Islamic terrorism, an outsider ready to fight for conservative values in the Senate. Conservative Republican Kevin Nicholson, reporting for duty.
Scott, why is it so important for Solutions for Wisconsin to burn in the image of Kevin Nicholson as a conservative?
This has been a big week, a big week in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. Not only do you have that first ad, but you've got Steve Bannon, a PAC that he supports, throwing their support to Kevin Nicholson, essentially branding him as the outsider candidate who's going to come in and support the president's agenda more than, allegedly, Leah Vukmir. So he's now got four outside groups supporting him, including the one that we just saw this ad from. And as you mentioned, the narrative that they want to drive home is that he is a conservative outsider who is going to, you know, kind of ride that Trump narrative a little bit or a lot. Leah Vukmir is pushing back against that, saying that, you know, she's the only proven conservative because she spent 15 years in the legislature, and her record is pretty clear on a lot of these issues, whereas, as you referenced, Nicholson doesn't have a voting record, and the record he does have is of being a former Democrat. So Leah Vukmir now is faced with the challenge of going up against the Bannon folks and some of these national conservative groups that are going to be spending a lot of money on her opponent, and having to prove to some degree her allegiance to the president, even though she, after endorsing Scott Walker, which I don't think anyone would fault her for, she then endorsed Marco Rubio and then went on to Trump after that. So it's just a fascinating dynamic in this primary that's going to play out for the next year.
I've learned from covering races is endorsements don't mean much unless they spend money. So the fact that Solutions for Wisconsin is spending money means something to me. Freedom Works also endorsed Kevin Nicholson this week. I don't know what they might do in the race. We know Club for Growth, who's backing him, is famous for doing conduit money to candidate supports, and Mark Newman benefited from that in 2012. So with the Great America PAC, though, what I'm wondering is, what do they do for Nicholson, and is there any downside to this? I mean, I've talked to a lot of Republican operatives this week who are like, well, there's a hitch to this all thing, where, one, Donald Trump did not do well in Wisconsin last year. He lost the primary by 13 points, I think it was, at least a dozen. Then two, the last time Bannon and Breitbart played in Wisconsin primary was the first congressional district, Paul Ryan and Paul Nehlen. Paul Ryan beat him 86-14. Now, this is not Nehlen-Ryan. This is Nicholson-Vukmir. But do you see any downside to the being tied to Trump or playing at the Trump thing so much in this primary?
Yeah, so, I mean, Wisconsin's not Alabama. Mm-hmm. The dynamic here is a lot different. Leah Vukmir is well-known to Republicans around the state. She's been working the circuit, going to all the dinners and all the events you need to go to as you're preparing for this run. She's well-liked among Republicans. And there is this feeling of, as you mentioned, that Donald Trump, he won the state. But in the primary last year, he didn't. And so Vukmir has grassroots support from being around and being a known quantity. She won the Wiz Politics straw poll at the convention. She is banking on that core support carrying her in the primary. And so we'll see if that outside money can chip into that and, you know, get the storyline out there that they won on Nicholson, or if Vukmir can make her case and bring people out.
Yeah, I get the impression her challenge is to so she can raise the money to compete with Nicholson. That's going to be big because she's going to do well in the Wild Counties, right? That's her home base. Talk radio is kind of on her side a little bit. The Trump stuff seems like it would help more in northern and western Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there are enough votes out here to compensate for the numbers you run up in here in a primary, especially if you can tap into the Green Bay market. Now, Trump did well in Brown County, so maybe that's a place that Nicholson could go with this and do well. But I'm watching that two-thirds of the population is from Green Bay to Madison and over, and that's where you think that Vukmir would have a little bit of an edge right now.
Yes.
So let's talk about, go back to policy stuff. So Foxconn, we were told they had to get that bill done by September 30th. It had to be done by then to get this thing signed. Mm-hmm. It's now October 19th. 20th, sorry. It's not been signed. And we keep telling us it's no big deal. Is it a big deal? The contract is not done 3 weeks later or so?
You know, I'm not an expert on contracts, right? But clearly, like, the kind of buzz is building around what is taking so long. You've got State Senator Carpenter, who is a member of the WEDIC board, who, after they didn't take action on the deal this week, said that there's a nuclear bomb provision that we need to deal with and wouldn't go into details about what that is. You have the president earlier this week saying things where making it sound like the Foxconn deal maybe wasn't hewed in stone. I don't have his exact words. Maybe you do.
I think it's going to be in Wisconsin or something like that.
I think it's going to be in, right. So we all know that he, you know, often says things that are open to interpretation. The administration and Governor Walker, they're all very, you know, ironclad that everything is moving forward. It's a complex deal. It's a $3 billion deal. The September 30th deadline, that was in an MOU that both sides agreed to. So as long as both sides are still working together, there's no reason to hold anyone to that deadline. They're meeting again on November 8th, and we're told that would be the soonest they would take action. So that's the same week the governor is announcing that he's running again. So that first full week in November is going to be an action-packed one. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw other candidates getting in to different races that week.
Yeah. I guess the things I've been told to watch are, does Foxconn keep hiring people? Is there progress at this site? You know, we see, like, walls going up, foundations being poured between now and next summer. If there is progress by next summer, all is well, no matter when this thing is signed. Mm-hmm. But we've seen a lot of broken promises from Foxconn, other places, other countries. So if it gets to be summer and nothing's really happening, then I get the impression that Walker might want to worry a little bit then. But the real, whether this thing actually works, we won't know until you and I might be retired by then.
Well, after the November 2018 election, that is for certain.
Which is good for Walker. You know, as long as you can see some progress, it helps. But if nothing's in the ground by October, I would be worried, I guess, if I were him. So can I keep moving along? Let's be honest. The University of Wisconsin doesn't have the best relationship with the Capitol. Hasn't for a while. It's gotten better with Ray Cross. These private foundations that help pay for costs on campuses, they blew up with the UW-Oshkosh situation. UW came back with a report this week saying that basically it's confined to Oshkosh. Don't worry. But, oh, by the way, there are about 35 million transactions we had. We went back over about 5.4 million of them just for a second look. But nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's anything to worry about with those? Is that going to appease Steve Noss to hear, don't worry about it?
Well, I'm not going to predict what will appease Steve Nass. but I will tell you that it's interesting that they got this report out before the Audit Bureau comes out with their audit, kind of getting ahead of the issue. Mm-hmm. It came out, as you outlined, there wasn't a great uproar one way or the other, it seemed like to me. Yeah. Just kind of went out there. So I don't know if that means that people are waiting for the Audit Bureau report to take a an independent look at things, or if they really felt like satisfied by it. I think that one is, that's a TBA. Stay yeah. tuned.
Rob Coles, co-chair of the Joint Audit Committee, said that's nice, but I want to see the Audit Bureau report. Right. One thing that I noticed was Steve Nass wasn't really around this week to comment, and Scott Fitzgerald, earlier from the Senate, is on vacation at his ranch and basically unreachable, apparently. So Fitzgerald was very much unhappy about the Oshkosh thing, said, hey, we have to look at all these things. There are too many foundations. What's going on? I'll be interested to see what he talks about when he comes back. That might be an indicator of could there be more to come? Because, they've had the surplus they've had to deal with, the bad timing of announcing a tuition increase the day the surplus was revealed. They've gotten better with Ray Cross at the helm, it seems like, in terms of relationship with the Capitol. Mm-hmm. This could be another problem for them unless they manage it properly.
Let's not forget, we also have the free speech yeah. bill that's pending in the Senate, with Scott Fitzgerald being noncommittal on where that's going to go. So that kind of all plays into everything else that's going on.
Oh, yeah. And they're noncommittal about most things this fall, it seems like.
Right.
We've got a mining bill, a constitutional carry bill, the free speech bill, fetal tissue bill. They're going to be on the floor for 2 days this fall?
2 days this fall that we know of, and not very many next year, most likely.
It can either be action-packed or very dry. I think we're on the floor in November. So let's switch back to politics again. Campaign finance reports are in for the third quarter for congressional races. Most of the time in an off year, they're not that interesting. But a couple of things I think are worthy of note. One, Paul Ryan is still, the king of the hill when it comes to money in the bank, $10.4 million cash on hand. Congressman Sean Duffy are better fundraisers. Every time he turns a report in, because he's raising money aggressively, I hear well, look at the Senate race again. He had $538,000 raised this past quarter. $2 million in the bank. His people swear he's not going to change his mind. Do you hear anything differently about Duffy looking at race again?
You hear those rumors. When last time I talked to his people, they were emphatic that he's not running again. His mind has not changed. I have no reason to doubt them.
Yeah, for most of the other members of Congress, they were small numbers. I should say they're average numbers. Like Ron Kind always does all right, has a good bank, wasn't challenged last fall. I think we have to note that Steve Toft, a retired Army colonel, is going to announce on Monday that he's challenging Kine. So after the free pass he got in 2016, Kine will have a challenger. Also, worthy of note, Ryan Honnell, a major critic about the Toma VA scandal, endorsed Kine in the local paper. So that could take a argument against him off the table. Be interesting to watch. But do you have any feeling, do you think Ron Kine's in trouble next fall after getting a free pass, even though President Trump won his district
right.
in 2016?
I don't know anything about his opponent. I don't know what he'll bring to the table. I think anytime you have an opponent, you have to be concerned, if there's a wave or if there's something else going on. But Ron Kind has proven to be pretty resilient when he has a challenger, so we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, talking to people, it felt like if they were going to beat Ron Kind, it would have been last fall, when he wasn't expecting it, when this wave kind of caught all of us off guard in western mm-hmm. Wisconsin. Kind of Trump would do okay out there, but we didn't expect him to win the 3rd Congressional District. That would have been the time to beat Ron Kind. Now that he's past that, he's got this money in the bank, he will spend it,
right.
I assume liberally, next fall to win re-election. I think it's going to be much tougher. Plus, you have the midterm election, the snapback against the White House. We've had the 2002 election was maybe like the only ones in my career that wasn't a snapback against the White House. Mm-hmm. And still some Dems won in Wisconsin that year. So I think Kind, I would feel okay in his position. Not safe, but okay. At the other ones, and the one thing to note, in the 6th Congressional District, Steve and I talked about this last week, that Glenn Grothman was outraised by Democrat Dan Cole. Now, that Cole name is familiar because he's a nephew of Herb Cole, the Cole chains. That's the Cole family. Do you think that's a really competitive seat?
It's interesting because Grothman went on the radio and talked about how worried he was and that he needs to do better and all these kind of things, which, maybe was a way for him to kind of raise some flags to get some more money to come in. And maybe he was also genuinely a little bit concerned because if you're the Democrats, you look at that and say, well, maybe this guy really has a chance. He's doing well financially, let's pour some money and make this a seat that gets put on all the lists of a vulnerable, you know, could flip kind of kind of seat. But you know, that is a conservative district, and so it'll be an uphill battle for Cole, even with the name and even with some money. But you know, it's winnable.
Yeah, I think we really should note the first congressional district. I mean, I've been covering races for a long time in Wisconsin. I've never seen a first-time challenger raise $1 million, a House challenger raise $1 million in a quarter in an off year. I mean, I think Steve Kagan raised $1 million a couple times, but he paid for basically those campaigns. This guy raised $1 million by having a national fundraising operation. His opponent, Kathy Myers, in the primary had $82,500. I think a good chunk of that, a third, was her own money. So he's got a huge advantage. But in Paul Ryan's numbers, it's $2.3 million. But of that, $2 million was a transfer from the NRCC, and he spent that, like, sent that much back for some reason. So is Bryce a real threat to Paul Ryan?
You know, I don't know. But, I mean, you mentioned it's a national fundraising operation. I mean, he had that launch video that caught everyone's attention, got tons of press. He's been on the fundraising circuit, aggressively raising money. It's an interesting little proxy battle down there. We'll see as things go along how he pans out against Ryan. You know, I don't think anybody could tell you very much about Randy Bryce beyond what is in the campaign ads. Paul Ryan is a known entity down there, obviously, but the fundraising numbers are incredible. They really are, and so we'll see how that plays out locally. A lot of the people donating to both these guys don't live in the district, so
I get the impression that if you don't like Paul Ryan, Randy Bryce is your vehicle to express how you don't like Paul Ryan and give him money.
Right.
He's been a lot of pictures of famous people last few weeks too. So let's switch gears to the stock report, Spalding stock report. So this week we had Corey Mason rising, member of the State Assembly, a Democrat from Racine, won a special election to become the Racine mayor. What I hear from people is that this is good for Corey in that he gets out of the smallest minority in the Assembly since 1957. He's got a platform to advocate for change and impact change that he wouldn't have in the Assembly. And if you look long term, there's an opportunity for him, if he does well, to run for something bigger and better. Now, the hitch is, it is Racine. The city has problems with unemployment, crime, failing schools, so you could get sucked in the morass of this if you can't find a way to improve them. What's your impression of Mason's win in that election?
I agree with everything you said. It's a win for him. He's been around for a long time. It gives Democrats a chance to point to something and say, look what we did. This is a good thing. We won something that matters. And you know, it'll be interesting to see, kind of, as you said, how he kind of parlays that going into the future.
Yeah, I mean, the downside for some Democrats is you lose a young bright member, and they need more young bright members, not fewer. So next this week we had America's Dairyland. So, Scott, we both were around for a while.
Yeah.
These are the kind of the silly catnip stories, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
Tell me, you were there.
I was there. It was a Chamber of Commerce, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce luncheon that Paul Ryan was speaking at. And before he came out, WMC President Kurt Bauer, no relation, offhandedly remarks that maybe we ought to think about changing the license plate to no longer say America's Dairyland. Unbeknownst to me, he has been talking about this for a year. He had written a column talking about this and that we need to be more inclusive of other industries, and he referenced Foxconn and a number of other things. Clickbait, you know, right away. The State Journal did a couple stories on it. It's something that people feel strongly about. America's Dairyland's been on the license plate since 1940. It's not an official motto or anything, but it's, you know, most people associate that with Wisconsin.
It's the third rail Wisconsin.
Third rail.
Life, right? And finally, we had the DNR. They reached a settlement with the Dairy Business Association about CAFO regulations. This seems like the DNR, I got to watch, if the DNR is trying to get out of some of these regulations or trying to pull back a little bit, is it because they couldn't win or because they wanted to kind of say, okay, we want to try and ratchet down things right now? And that wraps up the show for this week. I'm J.R. Ross, filling in for Steve Walters.
I'm Scott Bauer.
And that's Rewind for October 20th. See you next week.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.